Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 3 lines from the top of Daf Samach Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we have a No say, a topic heading that you find on the side, which reads, number 1, Haim mutar lechover, lahafrish chala meisa, utruma mishemen zayis shel amoretz. Is it permissible for a chover? A chover is a person who is diligent when it comes to matters of tithing and matters of tumah v'tahara, matters of purity. Can a chover tithe, separate the dough tithe from dough of an amoretz? The dough tithe, the challah, is given to a kohen. And likewise, can a chover, the diligent individual, separate the truma tithe from olive oil belonging to an amoretz? Of course, we're assuming that the amoretz gave his consent to the chover to act as his agent. But even so, is it permissible? A second point, Hachonas Isa v'shemen zayis shel amehoretz al yedei chover. This second point deals with a much earlier stage, namely, can a chover prepare from olives olive oil? Can the chover make from flour the dough, all using materials belonging to an amoretz? In other words, the chover is working on behalf of the amoretz to prepare his dough from scratch and to prepare shemen zayis from scratch. You're probably wondering what's the problem in this, and that is what the Gemara will reveal. The Gemara, we start with a Tanaic source. The last word in the line, 3 lines from the top, Heid, means to say testimony, to report. Heid Rabbi Yosi ben Hamshulam Mishum Rabbi Yochanan Ochiv. Rabbi Yossi said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, his brother, Sha'omar Mishum Rabbi Lozer ben Chasma, who in turn said in the name of Rabbi Lozer, Ein Oisin Chalas Amoretz Betara. This is reference to dough that an Amoretz had already prepared. And the Chover would be coming to separate the Chalotai, so the source says not to do that. The Chover should not separate the challah tithe from the amoretz's dough. Aval, oisin isas chulin betara. However, a chover can prepare dough from scratch, dough for the amoretz. In other words, it's materials that belong to an amoretz, but they haven't been made into dough yet. So the chover can make the dough, and he's going to process it in a state of purity. V'notel himeno kedei challah, and then he will separate an amount of dough that is the required amount for the challah tithe. The challah tithe is, let's say, 1/24 of the batter. So he sets aside that amount of dough. Umanicha bekfisha oiba anachusa, and he then places it in a vessel, referred to here as a kfisha or an amchusa. These are vessels that are made of worn-out leather skin bottles that are not customarily used for holding dough. Ukshibo amoretz lito noitel es shtehem ve'enu choshesh. And when the amoretz comes to collect his dough, he comes and takes both of them. And we're not choshesh, the one who prepared the dough is not going to be choshesh that the amoretz, who is not assumed to be tohor, that he would come and touch the challah tithe. The challah tithe has the status of truma, and truma is not allowed to be defiled. Let's go over some of the points by looking at Rashi, third line from the top in the Rashi commentary. Ein oisin chalas amoretz betaro, amoretz she'omar legabo chover, and ignoramus. He's a person that's not to be trusted with regard to matters of purity. And he comes and he approaches an igabel, a kneader, one who kneads dough, who's a chover, who is diligent in these matters of purity and in tithing. He says, Hafresh chalo meisosi vase oiso betaro. Separate the challah tithe from my dough and do so in a state of purity without encountering, new sources of defilement. Lo yishmalo, you, the gabo chover, should not listen to him. Do not cooperate with him. Sharei kvar nitmo kol iso b'yad amoretz. All of the dough that was already prepared by the amoretz has already become defiled. So what's the problem now? The kohen yismoch al hagabol shuchover. The kohen who receives the challah tithe will rely on the gabol who is a chover via sovur she hachalot Torah, thinking that the challah has not been defiled, but it has become defiled as part of the original dough, which had been prepared by the Amoritz himself. So that's why we don't want a gabel chover tithing, separating the challah tithe from already prepared dough belonging to an Amoritz, as we just saw in the Rashi, because that will mislead the Kohen who is receiving the challah tithe. And challah, just like truma, must be maintained in a state of tara, otherwise it's forbidden to eat it. In contrast, though, we saw in the source that the gabel chover could be hired to prepare dough from scratch for an amoretz, and we saw in the source the dough after he would prepare it would then have the challah separated. The chover would separate the challah tithe, put it in a separate vessel, the kfisho anchusa, as we saw, and the amoretz could then take them home. The Gemara will deal with the question, but is there still no fear that the Amoritz will defile it? We now turn back to the source. We're going to pick up with where you see the little bays. Up till now we were discussing dough preparation. V'ein oisin trumas zeisov betara, aval oisin zeisim chulov betara. First of all, we see here that the chover shall not separate the truma tithe from the olive oil that the amoretz prepared. However, aval oisin zeisim chulav betarov and not America de truma umanicho bekelov shel chover. The chover can be hired to prepare olive oil from scratch. And after it's been prepared, he would take off the necessary amount for truma, place it in the vessels belonging to the chover. Ukshebo amoretz litol no tel eshtem veinu choshesh. And when the amoretz comes, he'll then take both the shemen zayas, the olive oil that this chover prepared, and the vessel containing the truma that was separated from the olive oil. Just a technicality. When we began reading here this Bay section, said Ein Oisin Trumas Zeisov Betara, Rashi explains Ein Oisin Trumas Zeisov Betara Le'achar Shehofach Zeisim L'Sitom Le'Beis Habad. After the olives that had been sitting for a while were then flipped over to be placed in the olive grindstone. Ein mafrishin badodim chaverim truma mehen lasusim betaro l'fishi kvar huchshuru b'ma'aton. The olives, at this point, when they're placed in the grindstone, they have already become susceptible to absorbing tuma. The maaton is the vessel in which the zesim are, let's say, kept till they, say, soften up and get ready for the olive oil making. And at that point, they became huchsher, they become susceptible to absorbing tumah. V'nitmu v'akein soymech aleihem v'sovishem tarmet. And as we saw before, the kohen will be misled. He'll think that they were done, that it was, everything was done in a state of tara, when that's not the case. However, if the chover is going to do everything from scratch, then we're assuming, like we saw in the Reisha, that the chover is going to maintain the tara till the end, until the Amoritz comes and picks up his stuff. The Gemara asks, the time of my, why do we allow the chover to help out the Amoritz? We're saying that he's allowed to help him out, even though there is a chashash, there's a doubt that the Amoritz might touch the tithes and defile them. Of course, this question is based on the, we'll say, the spirit of what we have learned in our previous shiur, that there are restrictions in how much a diligent person can assist Amoratzim. So why here are we allowing that? Om Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Kedei Chayov Degabol, Mishum Kedei Chayov Debadod. Kedei Chayov has to do with income, minimum income for self-preservation. We're concerned here with the income of the Gabol, that's the kneader of dough, and the income of the Badod, the processor of olive oil. And in order to accommodate their income needs, we'll say this leniency of their processing or making the dough for the Amoritz and making the olive oil for the Amoritz. Utsricho, and the Gemara points out we need both examples. And don't think the Iashmein and Gabol, had we taught just the case of the Gabol, that we are lenient and allow him to prepare the dough for the Amoritz, Mishum Delo Nofish Agre. He doesn't, that literally means his wages, his pay is not great. It's a type of, we'll say, low level income profession. So if we're going to exclude the realm of Amoratzim, he's not going to have enough upon which to subsist. Avol, Badod, the Nofish Agre, Emolo. The olive oil maker is paid well. Nofish Agre, a lot of income. He's paid well. So maybe we're not going to be, there wouldn't be room for leniency in allowing him as well to prepare olive oil for the Amoritz. So that's why it's necessary, in addition to the Gabol, to teach the case of the olive oil. The Ashmina and Badod, and had we taught you only the case of Badod, the olive oil maker, and the leniency in allowing him to prepare olive oil for the Amoritz, Mishum Delo Shchiachle, it's a type of income that's not constant. Literally, Lo Shchiachle, it's not on a regular basis. The reason for that is that the olive oil making process was seasonal. There was a season during the year when it was done, and the rest of the year it was not active. Avol Gabol de Shchiachle, the making of dough, is a daily issue. It's common. So even though the wages are low, he might have sufficient income from the fact that it's a constant needed service. So I would have thought maybe there we wouldn't make this allowance of allowing the chover to prepare dough for Amoratzim Tzricho. Therefore, we have to tell you that that too is allowed. Omar Mor, Notel Heimeno Kedei Chalo. This, of course, is a quote from above. We have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see above where this is coming from. The source taught us that the chaver can prepare dough from scratch for an amoretz, and the chaver will then separate kedei chala, noitel heimeno kedei chala, umanicho bekfisho banchusa, and he places the chala tithe. And just to remind you again, the challah tithe has the status of truma, and so far it must be maintained in ritual purity. The chaver takes the kedei challah, the amount fit for challah, places it in a separate vessel referred to as a kfisho or anchuso. We mentioned these are vessels that are made from worn out leather bottles, skin bottles. When the Amoretz comes, he comes and takes both, and we're not worried about him touching the tithe, the dough that was tithed as challah. You'll notice the structure of this Gemara is quite balanced. We have on the side a mivneh, structural note, a crown shape appears, highlighting havlotas kushios Zehos. We're highlighting similar questions. Sheishlach shel shema yiga bohem amoretz. Is there not reason to worry that maybe the amoretz nevertheless will touch and thereby defile the tithes? So we ask v'lechush dilma nogaba. After the chover prepared the dough, separated the amount fit for challah, we say the Amoretz comes and takes it. Is he not going to touch it and thereby defile it? The Amrinon lay, we say, we warn him. Chazi, we say, listen, behold, take note. E nagis ba, if you touch it, hodra letivla, it's going to revert back to its tevel status. And he, the Amoretz, is not choshud, is not suspect of eating tevel. Tevel carries with it a very severe penalty. Misa bidei shamayim. And that's something the Amoretz would that would deter the Amoretz if it were to revert back to tevel. He'd be out. He'd be lost because he wouldn't eat that. Now that he has it in two separate bowls, the tithed dough is something that he can eat. And again, we tell him that if you touch it, if you touch the tithe, it's going to revert back to tevel. So that will, as we said, that will deter him. Question: Valechush dilma lo ichbasle. Let's suspect that maybe he doesn't care. Uma says, no, that's not a reasonable concern. Hashta liskuni kamechaven. This Amoretz hired the chaver to prepare it for him, to take care of it. Liskuni means to fix it, meaning to prepare it and tithe it and separate. Michbas lo ichbasle. Are you going to then think that he doesn't care? He's concerned with the tithing taking place. And that combined with the warning, he's not going to touch it either. Omar Mar, notel himeno kedei truma, umanicha bekelov shel chaver ukshuba amoretz lito notel es shtehem ve'eno choshesh. This was again a quote from above regarding the preparation of the olive oil. Gemara asks v'lechosh duma nogaba. Aren't you concerned that maybe the amoretz will touch it? Bishlam ahasam. I understand before with the dough yisle hakera. There's something that causes recognition. We mentioned that the dough was placed in these unusual vessels. We mentioned, based on Rashi, that it was not customary to have dough stored in these vessels, in the kfisha or the anchusa. So there's heker, there's already a point of recognition, a reminder. But hocha, with regard to the olive oil, my hekera isle, what's there to remind him, to create recognition that would prevent him, remind him not to touch it? Answer: Demonach le beklei glolim, beklei avonim, beklei adoma. The olive oil is put in these vessels. There are three different materials mentioned here. These materials are that constitute these vessels are not capable of absorbing tumah. The realm of defilement is simply irrelevant with regard to these vessels. Clay golem, vessels made of dung, vessels made of stone, vessels made of earth. Clay adoma is not to be confused with clay vessels, which are fired up in a kiln. These earthen vessels are, we'll call them sun-dried, and hence they do not mekabel tumah. And having the olive oil put in those vessels will serve as a reminder for him not to touch them. We take a look at Rashi. The clay glolim sheinam mekablim tumah, they don't absorb defilement. The e noga bekli lo mekabel tumah, if the amoritz would touch the vessel will not become defiled. Ubeisa gufa isle hekerim mishum hani kelim sheinam rov lishtamish ben. And as we mentioned earlier, with regard to the dough, there is the recognition vis-a-vis the vessels that are not customarily used. The amoritz lo achm rabbonu ole kulehai l'shavi kezav gom l'tami b'masa. Rashi adds a detail here that even though the amoritz is assumed to be tome, he's not assumed to have the tuma status of a zav, an example of a tome, of a defiled individual that will impose tuma even upon movement. So that's not a concern. Let's go back to the Gemara. If so, that the amoritz is put on notice by the fact that the olive oil is in these vessels, why does the original source, you can see we have a little star to the side of the Gemara text, you can see where this is mentioned earlier, why does the source speak about the olive oil that was tithed being placed in the vessels of the chover? Afilu d'amoritz nami, even if it's the amoritz's clay glolim, clay avonim, clay adoma. The Gemara says, hochi nami komar. In fact, that is what's said. Bekelim shel amoritz horu'uyin lishtamish bom chover. The source says, put the olive oil in vessels belonging to an amoritz that even a chover could use. What do we mean by even a chover could use? A chover is someone who is diligent and wary of defilement. Vessels made of these materials never absorb tumah. So even if they happen to belong to an amoretz, a chover would use them. So we're not talking about ownership on the part of the chover like we thought, but rather it's a reference to vessels that are fit for a chover to use. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah. Machzikin yidei akum b'shvius, during the Shemitah year, agricultural activity on the part of Jews is prohibited. However, goyim, Gentiles, are allowed to. They're not violating any of their mitzvahs when they work on do agricultural activity on Shemitah. Now, the term machzik in yidei akum at this point is thought to mean you can actually help him, physically help him in tilling his soil on the Shemitah year. On the side we have a topic heading, 2 points, Machzikin Yidei Akum B'Shvius, this idea of Machzik Yidei, and number 2, Ein Keiflin Sholom Lakum, when greeting an idol worshipper, when greeting a Gentile, you don't use the word Shalom twice. You're allowed to say Shalom, but not twice. Bear in mind that the word Shalom is one of the many different names of the Almighty. We speak of the names of the Almighty. The different names attest to different attributes of the Almighty. So the word Shalom happens to be one of them. Now let's turn back to the Gemara. Gemara asks, Machzikin, do you mean that you can help a Gentile during the Shemitah year in the actual work in the field? Omar of Dimi Bar Shishna Mishmei Derav Ein Erdrin Im Ho'akum B'Shvias V'Ein Kifun Shalom Li'Oved Kechavim. 2 points. One is that you're not allowed to till the soil with a Gentile on the Shvias year, and we speak of with the Gentile, it's with the Gentile in his field. you, the Jew, are not allowed to help him cultivate, till the soil. Nor does one say shalom to the Oivikom. Kuiflin is double. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says machzikin yidei akum b'shvias? Lo tzricha, rather lameimra lahu achzuku ba'alma. To machzik yodo, literally to strengthen his hand, means to encourage. You're allowed to encourage him with words. Kiha de Rav Yehuda amar lahu achzoku. Rav Yehuda would tell the Gentiles on the Shemitah year, Achzoku. Rav Sheshes Omar Lahu, Asharsa. The word Asharsa is a word also meaning Chizuk, strength. Strength be unto you. But once again, it's a function of words. V'ein Chayfun Shalom Lo V'kechavim. This is the second point that Rav made just above. Rav Chisda Maktin V'yoyev Lahu Shama. Rav Chisda, when he would encounter a Gentile, Rav Chisda would initiate the greeting. By initiating greeting, so then Rav Chisda is not on the spot to return a greeting. When one returns a greeting, it was customary to double the shalom. So by taking this, we call a evasive measure, initiating the shalom, which is, by the way, a very nice thing to do. In fact, the Gemara, I believe in Maseches Brachos, mentions one of the great sages, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, was Maktim Shalom L'Kol HaBrias. He would say Shalom, he would initiate Shalom to everybody, including Afilu Nochri Shebashuk. You see, Rav Chisda followed that practice. The Gemara in Brachas that I just made reference to is found on Daf Yud Zayin, and Rabbi Kiva Eger here draws your attention to a Gemara also in Brachas on Daf Vav that mentions the idea of doubling shalom in a greeting. There on Daf Vav, the Gemara is not dealing with Gentiles, though. We continue in the Gemara here. Rav Kahana Omar Le Shalmo Lamor. Rav Kahana would greet the idol worshipper with this greeting, Shalmo Lamor. And the Rashi says, Velo Hoya Miskavin Lavorchoi Elo Liboi Hoya Larabo. From Rashi, one can get the impression that he's saying that the greeting wasn't in effect a blessing to the idol worshipper himself, but rather when he said Shalmo Lamor, he had in mind a blessing to the rabbo, to the master. Now in this sukkah we're not dealing with slaves, so I'm left to assume that the master is a reference to to the Almighty himself. V'sholin b'shlomon, the Gemara asks, Hashto achzuki machzikinon. You told me already that we're allowed to encourage them. V'sholin b'shlomon mibayo, do I need to be told that you can greet them? In other words, that would seem to be anticlimactic. Once I know that you can encourage them, so all the more so you would be allowed to greet them. Omarav z'yevo lo nitzrucha elo liyoyim chagom. This halacha of Shalom B'Shloman, that you're allowed to greet them, has to do with greeting an idol worshipper on his pagan holiday. Desanya, the Tanaic source makes reference to laws that are associated with pagans on their holidays, and the fear is that any good turn that a Jew does to a pagan on his holiday will lead the pagan to thank and recognize, acknowledge his idol. And Judaism has great, let's say, weariness and concern remaining distant from anything associated with idolatry. So the source says, Lo yikones adam lebeisah shel evi kechavim biyom chagov yitein lo shalom. A Jew is not allowed to enter the house of an idol worshipper on his holiday and offer him greeting. Motzei bashuk, noisein loy besofa rofa v'kovid rosh. If you meet an idol worshipper, a pagan, on his holiday in the public thoroughfare, so you can greet him, but in a soft, low voice, and with a kovid rosh is a state of mind that would be seriousness and severity. So you can greet him under assuming those circumstances. And as Rav Yevo says in the Gemara, that the Mishnah that teaches Shalom B'Shlomam, so you're allowed to Shalom B'Shlomam on their holidays, but given these restrictions. We continue in the Gemara with an incident, and this incident in effect carries us to the end of the Perek, to the bottom of the Omid. Rav Huna, Rav Chisda, Havu Yasvi, they were seated. Cholif v'ozil geniva. This is the second time we're seeing an incident involving geniva. We saw this earlier in the third parak as well, in the sugi dealing with winds. So Rav Huna and Rav Chisda are seated, and geniva is approaching. Omer lechad l'chavrei, one says to the other, Neku mekamei de bar urian, who we should stand up in honor of him. He is a bar urian. The term Bar Urian has to do with someone who is has scholarship in Torah study. Omar Lo, the other one, said back, Umakami Palgonekum, in front of this argumentative, cantankerous individual, namely Geniva, should we stand up? Palgo is someone who would argue with the scholars, with the sages, with the Chachomim. And we saw at the beginning of the Masechta, back on Dav Zayin, Rashi quotes the Gemara that he was Mitzayer Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was the head of the court, and Geniva made Mar Ukva's life unpleasant. So why should we honor him? Adahochi, Asa, Ihu Legabai. In the meantime, Geniva reached Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. Omar Lahu, Geniva says to them, Shalmo Aleichu Malchi, Shalmo Aleichu Malchi. He greeted them, referring to them as kings, and he greeted them twice. Omru Le, they asked him, Ino Loch de Rabbonan Ikru Malochim, from where do you know that scholars, that rabbis are called kings? Omar Lahu, so Geniva answered, Dichtiv, Bi Malochim Yimlochu, Vechule. In that posuk, the Almighty is saying, kivyoch, so to speak, that the kings will rule upon me. That's an expression of how the Almighty has such love for Torah scholars, that when a Torah scholar prays and requests something from the Almighty, what the pasuk says, vatigzu omer v'yokam loch, the ruling of the tzaddik, of the Torah sage, comes to be. But again, in this pasuk, you see Melochim as a reference to Torah scholars. Omru Le, they asked him, Umenoloch de Kaflinun Shalmo Lamalchi, from where do you know that kings are to be greeted with a double greeting? Omar Lehu, the Omar of Yudah Marav, Geniva quotes Rav Yudah in the name of Rav, Minayin Shekifun Shalom Lamalchi, from where do we know that a king is greeted in a double fashion? The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, the Book of Chronicles, Divrei Hayomim Aleph, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Tes. The quote in the Gemara text itself is a bit abbreviated on the side. The more complete version is presented, whereby you see the idea of a doubling of Shalom. So the pasuk says, V'ruach lovsha es amosai roish ha-shalishim, L'cha David v'imcha ben Yishai Shalom Shalom L'cha. So you see that Amosai is greeting the king, King David, mentioning Shalom Shalom L'cha, a doubling of the expression. The pasuk goes on further, but for our purposes, this is what we needed to see. Amri lei lito mor midi. So they, Rav Chisda and Rav Huna addressed Geniva and said, "Would you like to taste something? Would you like to eat something?" Amalu achi amar Rav Yudam Arav. And again, he quotes Rav Yudam Arav saying, "Osir lo leodam sheitom or sheyochal klum ad sheitein maichol lebehemto." I can't eat until I've given to my animal to eat. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'nasati esav v'sadocha livhemtecha." The indication of food provided first for animals, and then it goes further to say, and then you will eat and be satisfied. The order indicates that a person is not to eat until his animals have been fed. And you can see with the help of the Almighty, we've completed now the fifth perek of Gittin. We continue on to Samach Beis Amid Beis at the top, the beginning of the sixth perek. We glance at the side where we have a Nosei / Mivne heading. A volcano or trapezoid shape appears. It highlights a Baal or an Isha. The opening of the Mishnah doesn't say the word Baal, but it's a reference to a husband. And next, on the third line, a reference to a woman, a wife, Hamimanim Shliach Leget, who appoint an agent to convey a divorce document. We'll make reference to two kinds of Shlichim. One is a Shliach LaHalacha. Halacha means for conveyance, to carry it, to take it, to transport it from one place to another, and only upon reaching the destination will the divorce take effect. The Kabbalah, Shlich Kabbalah, is a Shliach for receipt purposes, and meaning when he receives it, when an agent appointed as a Shlich Kabbalah receives it, at that point the divorce takes effect. Who has the power to appoint which kind of Shliach? You'll see as we go through the Gemara, this comes up in discussion. Another point that we'll be discussing here is, once the get is given to an agent, can the husband back out? Can he reverse things? Or is it, once it's in the hands of the agent, that's it? That's, the divorce has reached the point of no return. The Mishnah. Ha'oimer hiskabel get zeli ishti. Ha'oilech get zeli ishti. If the husband uses one of these expressions, either hiskabel, receive the get for my wife, or holech, carry the get, transport the get to my wife, imrotzo lachzer yachzer, if the husband wants to retract, wants to back out, he can do so. Rashi on the top says in the middle of line, yachzor de get choiv hula. The get is a detriment to the woman. The ein chov l'odom ela mida'atoi le'osois lo shliach l'chavoso. One cannot impose a detriment upon an individual unless that individual is aware, has knowledge of it, and let's say the appointment of the agent was with his awareness or his initiative. In this case, the woman who would be the victim of this chov, the subject of the detriment, she's not aware of the agent being appointed. So it's since she's not aware, the husband, maybe he appointed the shliach to convey the get, but since it's without her awareness, the husband can still can back out. Ho'isha she'amra hiskabel li giti im rotzo lachzor lo yachzor. A woman who appointed an agent, receive the get from my husband for me. Once the husband gives the agent the gift, the get, he cannot back out. We should mention, maybe it was obvious, and that's why we didn't mention initially, when the Mishnah says, Im rotzo lachzor yachzor, if the Baal wants to back out, he can back out. That's true until the point that the get reaches the woman herself. That's already a different story. But we're talking, right now we're talking at the stage that the get is in the hands of the agent. So if a woman appointed an agent and said, Hiskabeli Giti, and the husband gave the agent the get after he received those instructions, that's it. That's the get is taken hold, taken effect immediately by at the point that it reaches the agent himself. Lefikach im Omar lo habal, if the husband had said to a shliach that was appointed by the wife, and the husband said to him, "Efshi shitkabelo, I can't accept this, and I don't agree with this that you should receive it on her behalf." Ella, holech v'tein lo. Rather, you take the get and give it to her. So what the husband has done is he's changed the status of the of this agent into a shliach lahoylocha, and therefore if the husband wants to back out, he can back out until the get reaches the wife herself. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer Af Ha'Imeres Toil Ligiti Im Rotzalasu Lo Yachzor. Reb Shimon Gamliel introduces another expression that indicates that the agent is a shliach lekabol, an agent for receipt. Namely, if the woman told him, Toil Ligiti, take the get on my behalf. Omar Le, the Gemara continues, Omar Le, Rav Acho, Bre, the Rav Avyo, the Rav Ashi. Taimo de lo shavise ihi shliach lekabola. In the Reisha, where the husband used the expression, holech getze leishti, the Mishnah said, the husband can back out in the meantime, after he gave it to the agent, as long as the get hasn't reached the woman herself, the husband can back out. Now we infer the reason for all of that there's still back out, is because the woman had not appointed that agent as shliach lekabola. As we mentioned when we read the Mishnah, the Reisha describes a case where the husband is working on his own without the wife's involvement. Ha shavisei shliach lekabola. However, had the agent that the husband is addressing, had he been appointed by the wife to be a shliach lekabola, an agent for receipt, rotsa lasor lo yasor, the husband would not be able to back out. Should we therefore conclude a question that's raised in different places? Rashi points out it's a machlokas that we had in the first perek of this masechta. Should we conclude shamas mina holech kizchi domi, that when the term holech is used here, the husband uses the word holech, it's tantamount to saying zchi, take on her behalf? On the side of the Gemara we have a marking scheme, and the double underline appears along with a diamond. Diamond will appear shortly. Haim holech kizchi, v'im ashliach hu shliach lekabola. And if we say holech is kizchi, and if the shliach has been appointed a shliach kabola, ha'isha misgareshes miyad, the woman would be then divorced immediately. So should we make this conclusion that had the agent in the reisha on the beginning of the Mishnah been appointed by the woman as a shliach lekabola, and the husband's instructions to that agent would be holech, should we conclude that's it? There's no back out, because holech, the word holech, the instruction holech is kizchi, is the word zchi means take on her behalf, and that would mean this finish, the get takes effect. The Gemara says lo, don't draw those conclusions. I will tell you that the word holech doesn't indicate take on her behalf. Rather, it means transport, take it to her, but not instant receipt. What then is the significance of the reisha of the Mishnah? If we're not going to make the diuk that we just made, so then what is the reisha revealing to us? The Mishnah's agenda is to teach about the case of the expression hiskabel get li ishti. That was the first example in the Mishnah. The Salka Daita Chamina Hil Baalav Bar Shavi Shliach LeKabolahu. Since, as we know, it's a given that a husband cannot appoint a Shliach Kabbalah. We mentioned that in the Rashi that we read earlier, that when you're dealing with something that's detrimental, so you cannot create that detriment unless the subject of the detriment is aware and has agreed or instructed thusly. And therefore, a husband is not capable of appointing a Shliach Kabbalah. The Shliach Kabbalah is the one who, upon receipt of the get, she would be divorced immediately. So since a husband doesn't have that capacity of appointing a Shliach LeKabbalah, Afagav Demati Get LeYada, I would have thought that even when the get reaches the woman herself, Lo Lehevei Gita, since the husband used the expression Hiskabel Get Lishti, which one might have thought is the attempt on the husband's part to appoint the agent as a Shliach LeKabbalah. And if that, in fact, is the explanation, then the agent is not an agent at all. He has no license for bringing the get to her. Chomash Malon, what the Mishnah reveals to us is that when the husband says to an agent, Hiskabel, he's saying, Hiskabel v'holech komar, take it and bring it to her. In other words, the husband has no intention of creating an agent that he has no power to create. But rather, Hiskabel is just an expression meaning take it and bring it to her. Basically, a shliach lahoilacha. Before we continue further in our investigation about holech kizchi domi or not, let's look at Rashi, more or less across from here. Lo li'olam lav kizchi domi. The word holech doesn't mean instant receipt on behalf of the receiver. Vafilu shavisei ihi shliach lekabola. Even if she had appointed him the agent to be a shliach lekabola, the omar lo ihu holech, and the husband says to him, holech, holech gets elishti. Miaka akre mishlichusa. He, the husband, is uprooting, is undoing his assignment, the agent's assignment as a shliach lekabola. Vishavya ihu shliach lehalacha. And the husband is converting him, so to speak, into an agent for conveyance. Bahai denokat masnisin bedelo shavise shaliach. The choice of the Mishnah in describing an agent that wasn't appointed beforehand by the woman to be an agent, mishum hiskabel nokat lo. The Mishnah's agenda was to focus on the case or the expression of hiskabel. Hiskabel strichole lashminan. It's necessary to teach me that particular case. The afagav de lo shavise hi shaliach. Even though the woman had not appointed him an agent, Ubal nami lav bar shavi shliach lekabolahu, an husband is certainly incapable, legally incapable of making him into an agent of receipt. And again, receipt means upon receipt the divorce would instantly take hold. Husband cannot appoint him as such. Ella lahalacha, all the husband can do is appoint the agent as a shliach for conveyance. And the husband didn't say the word holech. Nevertheless, when the get reaches her hands, she will be divorced, even though the husband used the word hiskabel. So just to review, hiskabel, when stated by the husband, is not an attempt on his part to make a shliach lekabala. It's simply an appointment of a shliach l'holacha, and hiskabel means hiskabel v'holech. Rashi adds that since the Mishnah had to teach the case of hiskabel's get zeli ishti to tell me that it's effective, so by the way, the Mishnah also taught us the case of holech gets zeli ishti, even though that is, let's say, fairly obvious that that's an effective expression. But as we said, it's taught by the way. We turn back to the Gemara. We mentioned that we're investigating holech, the expression holech. What does that imply? Does it mean kizichi, take on the receiver's behalf, or does it mean simply convey? There's a difference between saying take on one's behalf. That would mean that whatever is being affected is affected immediately, as opposed to conveyance simply means transport it to the subject. Now, we continue. Tanan, we're at the second wide line of the Gemara. Ho'isha she'omro hiskabel li'giti imrotzo lasor lo yachsor. If the wife had said to an agent, hiskabel li'giti, once the husband gives the agent the divorce document, there's no backing out. My lav lo'ishno akabolo loishno aholocha. Is it not so that it would make no difference if the husband said hiskabel to this agent, or the husband had said holech to this agent? So let's focus on that case. You have an agent appointed to be a shliach lekabola by the woman. That's within her power. She can do that. The shliach lekabola approaches the husband and he says, "Holech gets elishti." And the Mishnah taught im rosal asa lo yafsar. There's no back, no point of no point of return. In other words, the get has just now taken effect even before it reaches the woman. That would show us that by saying holech, you're in effect saying zechi, take on. The word holech means take on her behalf, not conveyance. And you know, that would resolve our issue, our question. Is holech kizichi? Lo. The Gemara says, no, do not conclude that. Rather, a kabola. The term holech get zeli ishti, I should say reference to hiskabel on the part of the husband is the expression that's related to the Kabbalah, the Shliach LeKabbalah. We take a look at Rashi. Toward the end of the narrow lines, my lav, atravayu mili, detono li'el mino koi. The line of the Mishnah that described the woman that said hiskabel li'giti, the husband cannot back out, reflects or refers back to the two examples mentioned prior in the Mishnah. Lo shno ki omar ba'al kibla, lo shno holocha. It would make seeming no difference whether the husband said hiskabel or the husband said holech. Isha vise ihi shliach lekabola meikora. If she, the wife, initially had made this into an agent of receipt, lo yachzor, the husband would not be able to back out. Shema mino, if we would say that, then the result would be holech kizichi domi. The Gemara's response to that is no, but rather a kabola. If the woman had appointed a shliach lekabola and said to, instructed him, iskabel igiti, it's true, there's a point of no return, but that's only if the husband had said to that agent, hiskabel getz elishti, the first example of the Mishnah. So that what we have structurally, you notice in our markings, we had two volcano shapes. The second volcano shape, which introduced the isha shomra hiskabel igiti, and the Mishnah taught point of no return, that reflects back only on number one at the top line of the Mishnah. So that the husband, if he's addressing a shliach lekabola and said to the shliach lekabola, hiskabel getz elishti, then there's a point of no return. But if the husband said holech getz elishti to the shliach lekabola, that might very well be a redefining of the agency, no longer being a shliach lekabbalah, but the husband converts him into a shliach laholacha, and hence the husband would be able to back out until the get reaches the wife. Let's continue then. Toshma lefikach im omar lo habal. This, by the way, is a quote from the Mishnah. If the husband had said to the shliach that was appointed by the wife as a shliach lekabbalah, and the husband had said to that agent, "Ef shishi tekabbalah, I cannot accept this, that you shall receive it on her behalf," and she would be instantly divorced. Ella holech v'tein la. Im rotzo lachzor yachzor. If that happened, and the husband had said holech b'tein la, if he wants to back out, the husband wants to back out in the interim till it reaches the wife, till the get reaches the wife, he can back out. And now we infer taima diomar yeshi. The reason that there is still a back out possibility because the husband said clearly, he said explicitly, "Efshi, I can't accept you as a shliach lekabbalah anymore." Holo amar efshi, had he remained silent, had he not said that, so that what would the case be? A shliach lekabbalah approaches a husband, and he says to the agent, "Holech getz elishti." In the absence of the husband's denial, rejection, the efshi statement, im rotzo lachzor lo yachzor, the husband would not be able to back out. And what did the husband say? He said holech v'tein la, shma mina holech kizechi domi. It would then lead us to conclude that holech in fact is zechi, take on her behalf. The Gemara rejects that and says dilma behei loch. Very, very slight difference in the word. Instead of holech, the vav becomes a yud. If the inference that we just drew is, if the husband had not said efshi, and he said hey loch, then we would say no return. But as far as holech is concerned, that we're not going to conclude from here. We take a look at the Rashi on the first line under the Gemara text, Dilma Beheloch, Behach Seifa, Lo Tisni Holech Betainla. In the Seifa that we just read, from which we drew an inference that had there been no efshi, no rejection on the part of the husband, then the instruction the husband gives to the agent would represent a point of no return. That's because the husband said to him, hey loch v'tein la. The hey loch, that expression, vadai, hey loch kideka omra hi. This is unto you as she said. V'ilav de omar efshi havilei shliach kabbalah. Had the husband not rejected the agent's status as a shliach lekabbalah by the husband saying to him, hey loch, that would mean take it as she said, meaning the get becomes binding immediately. The divorce takes effect immediately. But just to repeat the main point, with this, we'll say, change in girsa, we're not coming to any conclusions regarding the expression of holech. You notice we have a slash marking in our Mark Gemaras. And by the way, if you need to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. On the side, we indicate there's a slash marking, which indicates that which follows is a new trend of thought. The topic heading reads, Haim ish o isha yecholim liyos shnei sugei shluchim, hoylocha v'kabbalah. The issue in the Gemara from here till the two dots that you see toward the end of the page, four lines up from the bottom, four or five lines up from the bottom. The topic is, we'll say, a gender-related discussion. Gender-wise, who is suitable to serve as a shliach leholocha? Who is suitable to serve as a shliach lekabbalah? The Gemara opens up with certain given, certain obvious points. Pshita, Ish have shliach lohlochatz. It's obvious that a male can be an agent of conveyance. Shekein baal moilich get leishto. We know that the husband himself can carry the get to his wife. The husband, obviously, is a male, and he is bringing the get. So we see that males function as a shliach lohlocha. We also know that a woman can be a shliach for kabbalah, for receipt. The woman herself receives the get from her husband. So as receivers are concerned, women can be agents for receipt. As far as conveyors are concerned, it's obvious that men can be agents for conveyance. There's more to say on this topic. Vis-a-vis the psukim, Rashi makes reference to the drushes from the psukim that when we say the husband can bring the get, we from the pasuk we discover it's not only the husband, but it's the one he appoints as well. Likewise with regard to the woman. So those are not points that we're going to be raising or discussing. What we will be discussing, and that's what we have highlighted here in Numbers 1 and 2, ish lekabbalah v'isha leholocha mai. What about a man receiving a get? In other words, a woman would have appointed a male as a shliach to receive on her behalf a get. His receipt would then represent instant divorce. Or what about a woman being appointed by the husband as an agent for conveyance? My, what is the halacha? So the Gemara continues with Toshma. There's a structural note. We have triangles featured here. First you have two we'll call regular triangles, and then the two more triangles with colored in tips. On the side, we attempt to explain, hopefully with some degree of accuracy, what the Gemara is going to do. So before we get into the Gemara, we read the Mivneh heading, Bahashalah, at the beginning, HaGemara Minasa Loichiach. The Gemara will first try to prove that the Odom Echad, the same individual, means one person, believe this yaches lemino, without reference to his gender, but the same individual, yachal yoshen, can be a shliach lehalacha and a shliach lekabbalah. Then we have the next triangle. Achar kach, afterwards, hagemora, mochicha, ezo, min, yachal, lios, gam hoilacha, vegam kabbalah. Then the Gemara will show which gender. And when we say which gender, we're not necessarily saying only one, but the Gemara will deal with the gender of that kind of agent that can serve as a shliach lohalacha and also serve as a shliach lekabbalah. So the first stage here is to establish that the same individual, without addressing what his or her gender is, the same individual can actually be a shliach lekabbalah and a shliach leholocha. Toshma, we quote from our Mishnah. Ha'oimer hisgabel get ze liishti, oyhoilech get ze liishti. Im rotzo lachzor yachzor. If the husband appoints an agent to convey the get to his wife, whether he says holech get liishti, where his kabel gets lishti, the husband can back out up to the point the get reaches the wife. Ho'isha shomra his kabel li giti, im rotzo lachzor lo yachzor. A woman that said his kabel li giti, and the get was given to the agent, the husband cannot back out anymore. My love, bechad shaliach. Is it not so that the Mishnah is referring to one agent? In other words, the same one that the wife had addressed is the same person that the husband is dealing with. Ushmamino, kosher lekabbalah, kosher lehalacha. And we conclude from this that that individual, we don't know the gender, but that's that one individual that's acceptable as a shliach lekabbalah can serve also as a shliach lehalacha. The Gemara says, lo, the Mishnah is not describing one individual that had been addressed by the wife and the husband. Rather, b'shnei shluchim. The Mishnah is simply describing two separate cases. one where a husband appoints a shliach for conveyance, and a separate case where a woman appoints a shliach for receipt. And as far as we're concerned, the husband was talking to a man because we know that a man can serve as a shliach halacha, and the woman was talking to a female because we know that females can serve as shliach lekabalas. Toshma. We still want to know, can we expand gender-wise the different kinds of agency that one could fulfill? The Mishnah said, "Lefikach imomar lo habal." If the husband said to the agent, "E efshi shitkabel law elahoylech v'tein law," I can't have it that you receive it for her. I want to redefine your status as a shliach lahalacha, and therefore holech, convey it and give it to her. In rotzalasi, also the husband can then back out until it reaches her hands. V'hohacha, in this case, the chad shliachu, it's clear that we're referring to one agent. In other words, you have an agent that was initially sent by the wife, and that same person is now being changed into a shliach lekabola by the husband. So it's one person, ushmamina, and therefore we can conclude, let's say an interim conclusion, that kosher lekabola, kosher lehalacha. The individual, again, we don't know the gender, but the individual that can receive can also convey. Now, we want to focus in on the issue of gender. Pshot mina ish have shliach lekabola. Let's conclude that when we just said that he who is fit to receive is fit also to convey, that's a reference to a man. We can at least conclude that a man can serve as a shliach lekabola because there's precedent for that. Shekein av mekabel get lebito ktana. A father can receive a divorce document for the minor daughter that he had married off. A father has the power to marry off his daughter, as long as she's a minor. If the husband should want to divorce her, the husband would give the get to her father, and she's thereby divorced. So we see that a male functions as a shliach lekabola. And we also know that he who was made into a shliach kabbalah can be changed into a shliach lahalacha, as we saw in the quote from the Mishnah where the husband has said, "Ef shishet tekabel," etc. Isha lahalacha tiboy alach, mai. What about a female being an agent for conveyance? Omar Rav Mori, toshma. So Rav Mori quotes a Mishnah. We've seen this earlier in the Masechta. We're not going to go over all of the background necessary for understanding this Mishnah in its entirety. The Mishnah makes reference to several kinds of women, five different women that would not be believed to testify regarding a particular woman's husband's death, making her into a widow and being able to remarry. We don't trust those five types of women, five relations. However, those very women that we wouldn't rely on their verbal testimony, we will nevertheless accept them lahavi as gita. What does that mean, lahavi as gita? And the Gemara points out, vasam holochi, they can serve, and we're dealing with females, they can serve as agents for conveyance. So with that, then, we've answered all the questions that we've put forth. The bottom line being, regardless of gender, the individual can be a shliach lekabola and a shliach lahalacha. Omar Rav Ashi, mi seifa nami shma mino. Dikotani seifa. From the continuation of that Tanaic source, you can also see this point. It says there, ha'isha atzma mevio es gita. The wife herself can function as an agent for conveyance. There, the Gemara got into quite a discussion. What do you mean she serves as an agent of conveyance? Once she receives the get, she's divorced. What do you mean she brings the get? So the Gemara explained that it has to do with conditions that the husband made, that the get should not be effective immediately, but only upon her reaching a certain destination. What then are we seeing? We're seeing that the woman, the wife, she's a female. She's functioning as a shliach leholacha. That's what Mevia as Gita means. She brings her get to the destination that was agreed upon. Ubilvat shehit shichalama b'fanen fanechtam. She, in cases like that, if she's bringing the get from outside Israel into Israel, she would have to say, called the agent's declaration, so that we know that the get was done l'shma and that there is a confirmation of the signatures. And we've established that case where it says Isha Atzma Mevia, it means she is working as a shliach laholacha. Shma Mina. So this too is conclusive. We see that a female can, in addition to serving as a shliach l'kabbalah, which we said before was obvious, she also can fulfill the role of a shliach laholacha. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.